Welcome, everybody. I'm Jesse Stakes, and this is Making Sense of It All. Last week's interview was about the game of golf and how it can be used as a networking tool for business professionals. We're sticking with golf as a theme this week as well. My guest this week is PGA professional Lynn Matisse. Lynn was kind enough to spend some time with me to talk about his career and how he has parlayed his success into helping his community by starting the Lynn Matisse Foundation to help kids on the golf course and also in the classroom. Enjoy the conversation. Let's jump into it. I have a treat for you guys today. I have professional golfer Lynn Matisse with me today. Lynn, thank you so much for joining me.
All right, Jesse. Good to be with you.
So the reason why you're joining me today is to talk about your foundation. But I feel like in order to do that justice, we need to step back and talk about you for a little bit and talk about your career. Is that fair enough for you?
Of course. Sure. Let's do it.
So what made you so passionate about golf to practice and take it up professionally?
I played all sports growing up, and my dad was an avid golfer, 1-2 handicap, grew up in the New York area. And I also have two older brothers that play golf too. So they were high school golf, and I was the younger guy. I'm about 6-7 years younger than my brothers. And so I kind of got not thrown in, but I watched a lot of it. And along with the baseball and football that you know, all the kids play when they're 5th, 6th, 7th grade, I pretty much, went all golf about 7th, 8th, 9th grade because I loved it that much. It just was something that I did a lot. I was pretty good at it and just kept doing it. So around 9th grade, 10th grade, I was starting to shoot around even par in like high school matches and amateur tournaments and stuff. And then I won the Florida State High School championship when I was in 11th grade. And that vaulted me right up to where, you know, all the junior rankings and stuff. So,
right.
I had a great opportunity to play college golf at Wake Forest, and it just kind of kept snowballing better and better.
Very cool. At what point did you know that you were good enough to play professionally?
Not until I made the qualifying school, you know, like when you turn pro, anybody can turn pro, you know,
sure.
that process is all you do is you elect to start playing for money. And so that's a simple process, but the idea to try and get on the PGA Tour is a process. So I went through the whole qualifying tournament to do that. And that was a qualifying in October, made it a qualifying in October, November, made it. And then a 6-round qualifying in December, 200 guys ended up being at that finals and 50 made it. And I actually finished tied for 40. So I made about a 4-footer on the last hole to make it. And then I was on the PGA Tour.
Now, I don't know if this is fair to say, but you think that was probably the most nerve-wracking putt of your life at that point?
That back nine, that I remember like it was yesterday. That was 1992, December. I was 3 years out of college, you know, just trying to make my way. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I shot 1 under par on my back nine to make it. And that 4-footer was, it actually went right to the edge of the hole and then dropped it.
That's so cool. So. I don't think people have enough appreciation for what it takes to play a sport professionally. I mean, I think that, you know, there's so many of us that dabble in it as an amateur or get to play it for fun on the weekends, but people don't realize the work and the effort that it takes to keep your game sharp and to play professional golf.
Well, in that instance with the qualifying tournament, and it's similar to what it is today, there was 1,000 guys that tried like myself to make it, and only 50 out of the 1,000 make it. So it's a numbers game. But the unique thing I think about golf is that it's a very connected game because like I can go out with a 10 handicap golfer, and they could beat me on a hole or two. They can outdrive me. They can hit it closer than me. And you get that connection of those shots. Everybody knows, like, when they hit that one shot, they make a 40-foot putt, they feel like they can do it more and more and more. And you can, if you spend time and practice and stuff. So I think that's what's unique about the game, is that amateurs like pros can have a period of greatness. You know, you can actually do really good things, and it's addicting, you know, to where you're like, that's what I want to do more of and more of. So I think that's the unique thing about it. You know, like in baseball, we can't throw a 95 fastball, you know, and we probably certainly can't hit a 95 mile per hour fastball, stuff like that.
Not today.
Let alone be in the box, you know, and you know what I mean? The general numbers, but for the golfer that goes out there and plays casually, they have those periods of great shots. And I think that's what makes the game so special.
No doubt. Well, and to your point, I can't go out and throw on a football helmet and say, I want to play pickup football, but I can go out tomorrow, or I can go out this afternoon, go out and pay a greens fee and go out and play the game of golf and play it the exact way that you would, that you'd see it on television, other than it being a competitive round.
And play it for a lifetime as well.
No doubt.
That's a thing.
Who were your heroes growing up?
I think Jack Nicklaus was my number one. And like, I like the flair of Chevy. And like the kind of the Midwest, happy-go-lucky Tom Watson, you know, that inner spirit. But the Golden Bear was number one. So, you know, always he was the guy, you know, when I was growing up.
Very cool. Do you have any favorite events, or do you have any favorite memories from when, I mean, you still play professionally, but from early in your career, is there anything that kind of stuck out in your mind as something that you just cherished and that you could, that you'll always hang on to?
Well, the majors were always, you know, the majors were always so highlighted, you know, sure. Where the Masters especially, because the Masters is the only major where you're at the same course every year. So for everybody that watches majors on TV, they can't really grasp the Open Championship, like Turnberry number 12.
Right.
But golfers can tell you about number 12 at Augusta or the back nine at Augusta or the first tee at Augusta and what that looks like, because it's familiar to everybody. So I think growing up, when that Masters came on, that was something we never missed. And yes. And that was kind of the most intimate major where you kind of got to know that major and the kind of the stories around it. You know, like 16, the par three, you know, with the green, the way it's built, and 12, the par three, number 10, downhill dogleg left. Those were always special things. So I couldn't wait to turn that on as a kid. And I got to play in three Masters in my career. So, you know, that was definitely a dream come true. One of the Masters I played, I was an amateur in college.
Okay.
And I was on a top 10 USA team called the Walker Cup team. And that at that time, the top 10, those players got to play the next year's Augusta. So I was in college. I was a junior in college playing at Augusta. And I stayed right at the clubhouse in the crow's nest on the second floor. I woke up and I was like, I fell out of bed on the first tee. So that was a very unique experience. And that goes back to like the old days. Bobby Jones, who's the founder of Augusta, helped build the golf course. And he was the greatest amateur there ever was. And he felt like it was always an important thing to include amateurs in this major golf tournament.
And how cool was that to receive that invitation when you're a kid in college and that comes in the mail? How neat was that?
It sure was. I mean, I've kept it, you know, to this day. That was a special thing. It's very official. It's white and green. And, you know, we are inviting you to participate in the Masters tournament. And that was 1988. I was a junior in college. So I was playing cool. Like that was our spring semester, you know, so I would play like the college event at Furman, the college event at Duke. And then I'm like, OK, guys, I got to go play Augusta. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
That's bragging rights with your friends right there.
For sure.
So my point in bringing all this up, I mean, there's a lot of people who know a lot about your career, but you have been blessed and you've had such a long career in the game of golf. You decided to give back. You decided to start a foundation. Tell our audience a little bit about that.
I did. I mean, I always had, I think, a service, a service gene inside me where, like, in high school, I went to Nice High School there in St. Augustine, kind of Ponte Vedra area. And I was part of a service club called the Key Club, K-E-Y, yes. Kiwanis Educates Youth. So we were, you know, we were a group of like maybe 30 students that did stuff in the community. And I think that's kind of where it started. But then I went to Wake Forest on a full scholarship. And then after a little while of really learning like what that really means, because the media, there was no social, you know, there's no social media, there's no internet. So like, I think the information was a little slower, you know, to kind of get out there, you know, like, sure. Wait, what scholarship am I on? How does that all work? How much money is in the scholarship and all that? So after I found out the kind of the nuts and bolts, people donated money. So guys like me could go to a school like Wake Forest and play on a full scholarship. So the wheels started turning. And then all of a sudden, I actually, with Wake Forest, I actually made a decision right out of college to whatever my earnings were going to be, I would give back 2% of my earnings back to the Wake Forest golf program to donate for a scholarship, for a future endowed scholarship. So 2% every year. And I felt like I wanted to kind of give back as I am moving along, instead of like being 80 years old. And there's nothing wrong with donating a big gift when you're old, but this way I get to kind of see the students that that scholarship reaches. And that fund is about 300,000 now in earnings. So the school invested, I donate, they take a little piece for partial scholarships and so on, so on. But I think the big thing for me was when the first tee was created, and that was a big Tim Fincham, commissioner of the PGA Tour. A big thing with Tim that he organized this thing called the first tee. Yeah. And that was about 1997, 1998. And I thought, you know, here are kids that are going to be exposed to golf. And what other better connection that I could give in my hometown to help out? So in 2000, I began my foundation. Originally, it was called Lens Friends Foundation, and started this foundation to help these first tee kids get exposed to golf, raise money for them so they could have programs in their activities. And to this day, we've raised about $600,000 for the first tee of North Florida.
That's amazing.
So, It's been great. And we've done all different things. We've done like a one event a year. We've done multiple events a year. We've done small 9-hole events, all kinds of things. And, you know, it kind of morphs as, you know, the years go by. But it's been great to see, like, these kids start out at like they're 8, 9, 10 years old. And then you see them now in college. You see them now after college. And they're successful citizens of their community. And that's what it's all about. And they're not like the all-star junior golfers, you know, like,
okay,
you know, but they teach all the, you know, all the great values of like honesty, perseverance, all these different factors that you want to be taught when you're a kid.
Sure.
So they grow up as tremendous individuals in whatever careers they take, and they have golf. They're good golfers, and they'll have golf for their whole life. So I'm really proud to be associated with that, and we keep donating because I believe that's a huge part of who I am with the connection of golf.
Well, and I've always felt, I mean, I grew up playing sports. I was blessed to have an opportunity to play some in school. But I felt like one of the things that sports instills in you is just that. It's the character that you get from it. It's the, you know, it's the values, especially in a sport like golf. I mean, golf, you have to be honest. You keep your own score. You call your own penalties. These are lessons that kids, if they can learn them in a sport like golf, rather than having to learn them in the hard way through actual life. I mean, to me, it's such a blessing that you're giving these kids this opportunity. I think it's tremendous.
Yeah, thanks. And they have to, you know, they have to be accountable with their schoolwork, as well as different programs that they have through their ages as they kind of go up the ranks within the first tee. And then like the best of the best actually get bonus trips. Like they'll go all over the country and represent their region first tee. And
yeah.
It's amazing. Like, they'll go out to Pebble Beach.
I'm not jealous of those kids at all.
It's incredible. So Jeff Willoughby is the executive director of the First Tee of North Florida. And now these programs are getting in the schools.
Yes.
So it's not just an after-school program. Like, for example, like part of PE would be learning how to hold a club and swing and, you know, what golf is to the masses of kids. So that's really great. You're talking like 160,000 kids in the North Florida area that are being exposed to golf, and they're growing the game.
No doubt. Well, and there's something else that you guys are doing through your foundation with the schools as well, called the Stop the Bullying campaign, correct?
That's right. Yeah. So we have the golf side with the First Tee kids, and then we have non-golf side. And this Stop the Bullying campaign is really taken off in the last 4 years that we've done it. We're in three counties focusing on middle schools. And I went to the superintendent personally. I went to each superintendent of each county and I said, we feel bullying is a big problem, and we'd like to be a supplement to your school and your programs, to your county. And they said, absolutely, we'd love to have you, and we feel like we could use the help. So over 50 middle schools that we're in, and what we do is we do semester projects with the kids. We basically challenge the kids to do any type of projects that they want. So they could do a poster. They could do a speech, they could do a community project, anything at all. And then we have a whole panel of that we review these projects. And what happens is that the school recognizes the kids that do it. We actually award the top of the top. We actually award every child, every student that does it. We give them something as an appreciation for doing the projects. But some of these projects, Jesse, are just incredible, like community reach. Like, for example, this student, his first name's Mills from Clay County. Okay, yeah. seventh grade, and he designed. He came up with a goodie bag for the homeless. So
very cool.
He writes this paper and he describes what he did for the last 3-4 months about how, you know, you go up to an intersection and you happen to see probably maybe a homeless person and they're asking for money. And you know, obviously families can't do that. So they came up with a goodie bag that they created. So like granola bars, water, actually a Bible verse, kind of like some type of like uplifting saying, and a couple other things like it's incredible. So they actually give it to the people that they see in their travels.
And it's amazing.
And that student's now challenged other students to do it in their school. So
that's amazing. That's incredible. I mean, I got to give it up to a middle school student that could think of that. And Mills, thank you very much. And I appreciate Lynn for sharing this with me, because I think that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that's right. It is amazing. And their community, these projects that really stand out affect the actual school time that they're like, for example, a female student, St. John's County, her name is Serenity. Okay. And she had they have to submit a paper on what the project is. So she describes that when she walks into school, nobody sees her, nobody acknowledges her, nobody knows that she's there. That's how she feels. So she's like, I'd like to change the atmosphere. I'd like to make this a better atmosphere. So she came up with this thing called a high five. So she actually created on paper, she cut out an actual hand. And they've now morphed it to foam hands.
Yeah.
And every so often when somebody wants to meet somebody or like invite somebody to the table, they actually give them a high five. And this thing exploded in the school. Like,
that's awesome.
It's all over the middle school. And she's totally changed an atmosphere in the school. And that's what we're looking to do in these middle schools, is we're actually challenging the kids to create, because kids are very powerful with their friends.
Yes.
You know, kids engaging kids. With our foundation, I have 25 great board members, and we believe that Kids Engaging Kids is a very powerful way to kind of attack this whole bullying campaign. And we would love to see in a classroom and in a school setting, just like 1 hour or one day go by where there's no bullying at all. And for that child that gets bullied, it's a miserable experience for them because it's day after day after day. And now with social media, they get it through social media as well. You know, a click of a button, that kid's kid is just going to get compounded bullying. So we feel like if we can kind of attack the middle and have these kids do these projects, it expands a little bit. We're going to address a lot of that problem and make the school environments better. If we make the school environments better, families will be better off. And then the community will be better off. So that's what we're about. And we're fourth year in, and COVID stopped us for about a year because we couldn't get into the schools and everything was put on hold. But we did it a year and a half before. And now we're, you know, after COVID. So we're able to have a little bit more access to the students and what we're able to do with them as far as help them.
Lynn, is there something that inspired the Stop the Bullying campaign? Is there a personal story or someone you knew, or how did it come about?
Yeah, personal. It is personal to me. My daughter in fifth and sixth grade, she was heavily bullied by appearance, you know, like arm hair and, you know, size, like, oh, you're three inches taller than the rest of us. You're a freak and blah, blah, blah. So that was physical appearance stuff. And it really hurt. It really stuck. And the kids are sneaky, you know, how they do it and stuff. And then in ninth grade again, and it was kind of a mix of who their dad was.
Okay.
Who her dad was. And he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they actually made fun. They made fun of a guy like someone like me. And as my daughter, she's my daughter, right?
Right.
It really hit her hard. But then it went off into other things. Like they were threatening to damage her car, and they would bully her in the hallway and you know, do the, you know, the whisper, and it just morphed into other things. Like it even went into, like, she's a political science person, so she likes current news, current events, politics, stuff like that. And teachers like that because they like, you know, like, hey, let's talk about what's going on in the current. She got bullied for that. There was nothing she could do that she could do right. And the school was very, very slow to do anything. In fact, they did. It was a group of five or six girls that, you know, were very aggressive to her. And, you know, we would bring that to the school's attention. We'd bring it to the teacher's attention. We would give specific examples. We'd show on social media printouts. Look what these kids are saying. The school did nothing. And it was so bad. It was real time. And, you know, it was slow for the parents because you think something's going to happen, you know, like a month later, because they're kind of talking nice and all that, but nothing happened. So eventually I ended up taking Noelle out of school and homeschool for 2 years for her to finish her high school stuff. And she's doing great now. She's blossomed. She's doing great. She's going to graduate college and really proud of her. But after 6 months of that, after we took her out, I thought about, like, do I just kind of go like this and say, hey, we're moving on, you know, or try and do something about it. And I thought, I want to do something about it. So I brought that to my board, and they loved the idea because they all either knew of somebody getting bullied, or they knew of either a family member or a friend that got bullied, even themselves got bullied. So we took it on, and here we are today.
Well, and it's really a shame that that had to happen to your family and to your daughter. But it's such a blessing for the world and for the area that you guys decided to take something so negative and turn it into something so positive. Now,
yeah, thanks. Thanks. You know, I'll tell you, just to go off that, just in the last day or two, I saw on the news a child took their life in New Jersey because of bullying. School did nothing about it. And then in the Virginia area, some kid got beat up and it was on video and got bullied and literally choked and beat up while no one's doing anything about it. Right. So it's everywhere. And what we're trying to do is pass messages along of kindness, compassion, and inclusion. And we would love for a day to go by where kids can do the high fives in school and have community service in mind, to where they're just a little bit more compassionate to their fellow students and make that environment better.
I think it's absolutely amazing, Lynn. So I know you can't pay for this all yourself. You can't be the one funding all of this. So you have events throughout the year that help fund your foundation, and you have one coming up. Tell us a little bit about the party that you are throwing on the Friday of the Players Championship in Ponte Vedra, Florida.
Yeah, thanks. The Players Championship, you know, golf's fifth major. And we feel like the excitement of that week, Friday night of the tournament, just 2 miles down the street. We call it the party of the year, but all the funds go for our Stop the Bullying campaign. And I need to say that, like, there's no administration fees in our foundation. There's no brick and mortar. You know, we don't have an office fee. We don't raise the money to use it. And I know foundations need to do that, and they're big and all that, and they have salaries. But the way we're formed is we have about a 99% rate of return with the money. So it's actually 100%. And then we raise the money and then we do the school programs. And that looks differently. Like, sometimes we get trophies or certificates or money awards or things that we have to spend. But the bulk of the money goes right to the students. So, well, all of it. Sure. Does. But this event is big. It's going to be like 400 or 500 people that come and go. It's at a homeowner's home in Ponte Vedra Beach. People, if they're interested, they can check it out on lenmatisse.com for ticket information. We always look for individual, you know, ticket people, that, you know, as well as company sponsorships. We have found we have about 15 companies that have signed on. So we're really grateful for that. And the response has been really, really great. Like, we're in our third year of doing this, and we sell out each year. So it's been a great response. It's a great night. So Murgato Automotive Group, so cars like Bentley and Alfa Romeros, they're going to be on site, you know, to kind of check out the best of the best. We're really happy. I mean, incredible that Murgato is with us. And they're based in Jacksonville, so that's a great fit. And we just have great sponsors. Seaside Bank is one of our great sponsors. Live Oak Contracting, Be Lit Inc. I mean, Cecil Powell and Associates. We have insurance, construction, all banking. We have all different types of companies that have joined on because they believe in the mission. And again, all the money goes to our Stop the Bullying campaign.
No doubt. And I can speak from experience. It's a heck of a party. It's a lot of fun. It does a lot of good for the community. And if you're looking to get involved in something around the Players Championship, if you're going to be in Jacksonville, in Ponte Vedra on that weekend, you're going to go see some golf. Again, you can't find a better event. And if there are tickets available, pick one up. You won't regret it. You guys do some other events throughout the year in conjunction with the First Tee and doing some stuff around actually playing golf as well. Can you tell the audience a little bit about some of those opportunities? Because I think those are pretty special as well.
Yeah, thanks. We have on the First Tee side, to raise money and awareness for them, we have 9 hole events that we go to different golf courses, and the golf courses donate their golf course for a late Sunday afternoon. And what we do is we bring First Tee kids, so maybe about 10 to 15 kids, and we bring them and we pair them with the members of the club that want to sign up. The members pay $100 to kind of be part of this event and to donate to the First Tee. So you basically 3 members and 1 First Tee junior play in a foursome. It's a scramble, so it's a fun format. Everybody stays together. They play 9 holes. And the members get to see what the First Tee is all about. So these kids they're like these little pro people, you know, they shake your hand. They look you right in the eye, and they actually have conversations, you know, with the members in the group. And I'm really proud of the kids. I mean, like I said, I've seen these kids now for 10 to 15, 20 years. So seen them, you know, the progression, and it's really amazing. And the first tee does a great job. So we love go. We've had 20 of these, Jesse, now 20 of these 9-hole events. We've raised about $40,000 in doing that. But the best thing about this is that when the juniors play with the members, they actually form friendships.
Yes.
And that's it. Like, that's it. Like, that is, you know, you can imagine some whatever member at a club, and they get to maybe connect with some 12-year-old, 15-year-old, and they have a friendship forever. And who knows, who knows what that leads to down the road, you know?
So no doubt.
It's been an incredible experience like that. And we'll keep doing that. And we're blessed that the clubs let us come on a late Sunday afternoon. We feel like it's a small imprint, but it's still a big ask for the clubs to have us, and everybody comes together for the cause.
No doubt. And I'll tell you this, when a kid is saving you five or six strokes because you're using their shots through the round, you become friends real fast. I will say this as well. One of the things that the first tee will offer with these events is the opportunity for some people that are non-members, if they have space, to buy foursomes or buy threesomes where you're playing with first tee members, these kids.
Right.
And it gives you the opportunity sometimes to play golf courses that you're not a member of that are private that you might not be able to play otherwise. So I thought that was really cool as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I believe you played at Plantation.
I did.
Yeah. And that at such a group, they've done it. They've liked it so much. We did it twice there. And what a beautiful place. And like you say, I mean, there are clubs that I don't see in Jacksonville. So like, there's an opportunity where you can come to a club, see what it's all about, see the layout. And yeah, it's really nice for them to open their doors.
No doubt. Lynn, I really appreciate you joining us. Once again, for our audience, if they want to get involved, if they want to buy tickets to your events, or they just want to learn more and be able to donate, where can they find you guys?
They can check it out at LynnMatisse.com. We have a foundation page, but you can't miss it in the menu. LynnMatisse.com. And we have volunteer, you know, that we have a volunteer arm as well. So like for this party, March 10, we call it the Mergato Automotive Group Players Party.
There you go.
And our presenting sponsor is The Collective, and they're a great group as well. But we're going to have 50 volunteers for this party as well. So top to bottom, it's going to be great.
Awesome. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us. And again, for all of you out there, if you want to join him, you want to get involved, you want to volunteer, you want to donate money, you can go to LynnMatisse.com. You can find all your links from there. Lynn, thanks again so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jesse.
I've been a participant and a fan of sports all my life. It brings people together in a unique way and gives us all something to root for, especially when you're talking about someone like Lynn Matisse. He knows that he holds a unique position and has an opportunity to be an advocate and a facilitator for change within his community. Thank you for sharing your story with me and our audience today. Their story doesn't stop here, though. If you want to be a part of it, get connected with the Lynn Matisse Foundation at LynnMatisse.com. That's going to wrap us up for today. We'll catch you guys next time.